Hey there, and welcome to the Marketing Genius Podcast, the show designed to teach you how to sell, how to build systems, create strategy, and of course, how to become a marketing genius. What's up, everybody? Grant Weiss here. Welcome to the Marketing Genius Podcast. I am pumped today to be joined by Mr. Carl Allen of Ninja Acquisitions. He's going to drop by and add a ton of value to you guys today. Carl, thanks so much for jumping on.
Thanks for having me, Grant. Really excited.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's jump right in, man. Tell everybody, who are you? How did you get to where you are today?
Okay, great. So for the last 26 years, I've been buying and selling businesses. That's my one skill set that I truly mastered over the last quarter century. And I grew up on Wall Street. So I was an investment banker back in the day. I also worked in private equity and did a lot of kind of corporate transactions. And my last kind of real job ended in 2008, where I retired at the grand old age of 37. And I was in Moscow closing a big deal with Hewlett-Packard, who I used to work for in their M&A team. And I got a phone call from my wife, who was 36 weeks pregnant, that the baby was kind of on its way. And I had to get myself back from Moscow to the UK, where I live at the moment, which was quite interesting. So I got back home like 5 minutes before the little guy came out. Josh is now 11, and I quit on the spot. I just thought, you know, I can't do this anymore. I'm tired of working for other people. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. And I kind of quit my corporate world, and I had, you know, one big challenge was that I only had one skill set. You know, my skill set was buying and selling businesses. So I started buying and selling my own businesses, which I still do. I own 17 different businesses today in lots of different sectors all over the world. And then about 2.5-3 years ago, I was just kind of inundated with people asking me to teach them and mentor them. So I built a whole portfolio of training and mentoring and coaching programs for entrepreneurs and real estate investors and business owners who wanted to scale via acquiring other businesses, and also people that were kind of stuck in a 9-to-5, were kind of trapped a bit like I was back in the day in corporate world, and just wanted freedom and work-life balance and some control over their own wealth creation, and wanted to use the acquisition and the ownership of a small company, you know, to give them all those things. So I that's what I'm really passionate about now. It's leading and serving and coaching people to kind of follow my methods and get these deals done. So it's amazing.
That's awesome. Love it. Love it. Business has been a gigantic part of my life. I've been in the entrepreneur space. I'll be 29 on Saturday, actually. And I've been in self-employed since I was 19. So a decade so far of entrepreneurship and a lifetime of lessons learned for sure.
Absolutely.
In the last few years for sure. So you love to buy and sell companies.
Yeah.
What do you look for when you go to buy or sell a company? Mainly when you look to buy a company, what do you look for?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And the types of deals that we do, and it's kind of the process that I've mastered through my own proprietary system, is what we used to call on Wall Street an LBO, a leverage buyout. So we're basically buying businesses using other people's money. So we're using debt financing, equity investing. So we're buying those companies and we're not having to put our own money into those deals. So when you look at what that perfect business looks like, it's like a triad. So there's three boxes that you need to tick in any deal that you want to do. The first one, and this is the most important, is that the deal's got to serve you as the buyer in some way. So if you're an entrepreneur and you're buying your first business, then you want to buy a business that's going to light you up, something that you're going to be really passionate about. It's probably in a sector that you already know and you understand. You've got real kind of passion for owning a small business in that space. It's a lot safer. It's a lot cheaper and it's a lot quicker to buy an existing small business that somebody's built doesn't want anymore than actually starting from scratch and creating a startup. So once you've identified, you know, what your requirements are to buy a business, and, you know, if you're an existing business owner, so let's say you're a realtor, you can expand your own practice by buying up other agencies. You might be able to buy, you know, a credit collections agency or a sign manufacturer, a sign install, you know, whatever small businesses exist within your own ecosystem, you can go and buy some of those up. And it's really interesting when you're a business and you buy another business that's complementary and has got some strategic fit, because there's so much leverage. You know, you can cross-sell products and services between the different customer bases. And as you bring these businesses together, there's a whole bunch of costs you can take out from doing those deals, which we call deal synergies. So once you've identified your why and your purpose and you know why buying a business makes sense for you, then really the next stage is you're looking for what I call a distressed seller of a good business. So you want to buy businesses that are in a reasonably good shape. You don't want to buy distressed businesses that are going to fail. You want to buy a good business that's got cash flow, it's got assets. And the variable, though, that we look for is a distressed seller. So we're looking for somebody that's got a high degree of motivation to want to come out of that business that they've built. They could be a baby boomer that's looking to retire. They could be sick. They could be dying in some cases, and not just them. It could be one of their family members. You know, I'm buying a company at the moment. It's a big online supplements business in the US. And the owner of that business is selling it because, sadly, his wife's got cancer. And he doesn't care about the money. He just wants a safe, trusted pair of hands to come in and take that business over so he can leave. He doesn't want to have to worry about that kind of stuff. So it's finding those types of people. And then the third element of a perfect deal is, and I just alluded to it, it's the kind of the financials of it. So you want a deal that's got cash flow, and you want a deal that's got assets, because we use all that as kind of leverage in completing the transactions.
I love it. I think I really like what you said there. And it's something that I try to pour into people at all times, because you live in an age where, you know, a lot of real estate agents, a lot of people in the real estate profession, some might not be full time, or some are trying to get multiple streams of income. And I think so few realize how simple it would be to maybe buy a business that doesn't require any extra work on their part, just complements what they're already doing. And so adding, you know, multiple profit pillars to the work that you're doing, that's huge.
Absolutely. And it's all about leverage. So it doesn't matter what sector you're in, but, you know, take real estate, because I know you're very familiar with that marketplace, is, you know, even if you're just a realtor, and the only way you can organically grow your business is just go and get more clients and you know, broker more deals. But if you look at the overall ecosystem of the kind of house buying and the house selling space, you know, you could go and buy a removals company. You could go and buy a mortgage broker. There's all these different businesses. If you laser in on your target customer and you say to yourself, you know, what do I do to serve them? But what are all the other things that they need as part of this kind of overall transaction that I'm involved with? And rather than let somebody else take the revenue and cash flow from all those services, go and acquire small micro businesses that do that. And then you're offering a kind of one-stop shop, all you can eat model. And then what that also does is it not only gives you a lot more revenue and a lot more cash flow, because you're getting a bigger piece of the pie, it helps you even clearly define your USP, which will allow you to be even more dominant when you're going out for organic business as well.
Who are some people, some leaders that you've seen that have done this really well, that have executed on this really well?
Yeah, so what's really interesting is this kind of model that we're talking about for really small businesses. We're looking in kind of the $1 to $5 million range. It really is an uncharted market. You know, there's only myself and a few other, I don't want to use the word guru, but, you know, people that have done hundreds and hundreds of deals and are mentoring entrepreneurs to do the same. But if you look at the kind of the big business world, you know, this is how the big business works. You know, back when I was at Hewlett Packard, you know, we went through a massive acquisition spree. You know, we were paying billions of dollars weekly for all these different companies to kind of bulk up the product portfolio. It's why Cisco and Apple and Microsoft and, you know, IBM, and like, look at Amazon. You know, Amazon's looking at its own business and thinking, well, you know, can we just sell more books, DVDs, and all those various things? Or, you know, should we buy Audible? Yes. Should we buy Whole Foods? You know, why buy Whole Foods? Because Amazon can leverage its own customer base and vice versa. And what happens when you do these bolt-on acquisitions, it's a 1+1=3 on the revenue side because of all that cross leverage of products, services, and customers. And then it's a 1+1=5 on the cash flow side, because as you combine these businesses together, then you know, you're able to take out a lot of, you know, duplicate costs that occur. And what's great about the large companies, the public companies, you know, the rocket fuel for those guys to do deals is, you know, they're selling their own stock in their own businesses. So, you know, when Apple buys a business or Cisco buys a business, it's swapping the shares of the business it buys for shares in its own kind of publicly traded entity. You know, for us at the small deal level, because it's all private companies, you know, we're using financing like the SBA, or we're using angel investors, or we're crowdfunding and all those different things.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So you've had the privilege of analyzing thousands and thousands of businesses, it sounds like.
Yep.
When it looks, this is maybe more just like an opinionated question, but when you look at companies that just do really, really, really well, do you find that, I'm going to dive into kind of marketing, branding, advertising, do you find that they seem to be better at the client acquisition game than others? Is how important do you feel like the marketing, advertising, branding process is to building a successful company?
Yeah, it's huge. So if you look at any business, all the businesses that I own and all the great businesses that I've seen, you know, small and large, for me, there's kind of four things that really kind of make up what differentiates the best from the not so good. One of them is obviously leadership. So it's the quality of the owners and the management team in leading and empowering, you know, a passionate tribe of employees and customers and suppliers. It's also your kind of your financial optics, your financial measurement of your business. A lot of it also comes down to your operations. So having a very organized, well-oiled machine that can scale. And then definitely what really makes the difference, in my opinion, is as a business, your ability, you know, to go out and do more sales, do more business. And obviously, you know, I'm a big fan of scaling like crazy through acquisition, but not, you know, notwithstanding that, you still need to have a strong organic model of growing your business. And for me, it boils down to a very, very simple thing. It's truly understanding who your ideal customer is, what pain they're in, what result they want, you know, what outcome they're seeking, how your product or your service can fulfill that, how the benefits of it, not the features, can map to what they're looking for, and then going and delivering that, you know, better than anybody else in the marketplace. And if you do that, you know, it's a game changer. You know, what I see a lot of from a lot of businesses, you know, I speak to hundreds of different businesses a month because I'm trying to buy them. And, you know, first of all, they'll tell you they don't do any marketing. It's all repeat business and word of mouth referrals, which is great because you know that when you start to scale the business with marketing and sales personnel, you know, it's going to grow. But it's really interesting is, you know, a lot of these businesses, they don't know who their customer really is. They don't know what they're really looking for. And they sell on features, not on benefits. It's like, you know, I'm jumping on a plane tomorrow to go to Germany to acquire a small business there. And yeah, I've bought a plane ticket, cost me $1,000, but I'm not really buying the plane ticket. That's the feature. I'm buying the benefit, which is it's getting me to another country in time to go buy a business, then I can fly back and see my family. So I, you know, people buy results, people buy outcomes. You know, they don't buy the physical stuff that gets them there. And it's like the people that come into my programs, you know, people that I mentor on a weekly basis to buy businesses, you know, they certainly don't want to buy a mentoring program on buying businesses. They don't even want to buy a business or own a business. They want the benefits. They want the outcomes that being a business owner is going to give them, like freedom, like work-life balance, like control over their own wealth creation, being an owner investor versus an owner operator. So they can stay in bed or go and play golf or go on vacation knowing that the cash flow is not going to stop. You know, those are the benefits. Those are the outcomes that they're looking for. The mechanics of how they get there. I see too many people, you know, using that in their sales and marketing And that's not really empowering a customer to make a buying decision to do business with you. Because, and you'll know this, if you've ever studied kind of NLP or anything around mindset or psychology, we make buying decisions using our subconscious mind. We make buying decisions with emotion. The emotions are pride and fear and greed and ego and all those different things. The logic of buying, like why do people buy Ferraris? You know, is it because of the speed? Is it because of the, you know, the color? Is it because of, you know, how comfortable the seats are? It's not that, you know, it's an ego purchase. People are buying Ferraris. It's an ego emotion that's triggering that buying decision. So, you know, I wish a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs, you know, kind of had that really front and center when they're marketing and selling their products. They're not really understanding, you know, what is the customer really after and what's going to move them to make that buying decision.
Yeah, I love it. We spend so much time trying to teach and educate and help, you know, our students, our clients understand that you've got to understand the psychology behind why your client or prospect or whatever is doing what they're doing, what they want, why they want it. So, so much that can be gleaned when you pay attention to your customer. So for example, right now in real estate, there's the major debacle over, you know, a big company, Zillow. You started out as a lead generation company. It's grown and grown and grown. And now they're moving into their iBuyer program. You're going to buy 5,000 homes a month. And there's a lot of angst around what real estate agents feel like maybe a company that no longer has their best interest might try to go direct to consumer. But what I've tried to point out over the last couple of years is that, you know, hey, look, you could learn a lot out of what's happening right now. And that's that Zillow has given the customer what they've wanted the whole time. 100%, no contract, no commitment, gonna give the consumer, going direct to consumer, exactly what they want. And it's not surprising that they've built a multi-billion-dollar annual company just giving the customer what they've wanted. And I think that real estate agents could learn so much from a situation like that. And it fits right into what you're saying. If you just understand who your customer is, you understand what they want at their core and why they want it, it makes it really easy to go out there and give it to them and grow a massive business doing so.
Completely agree. And I think one of the common threads in a lot of the great businesses, you know, Zillow is one of them, is people buy feelings. Mm. They buy how they feel. And a great example of this is Shake Shack. So we don't have a lot of Shake Shacks in the UK, but I was at one in Dubai about 4 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks before that, I was in LA checking up on one of my companies. And I went to one of the Shake Shacks in LA. And yeah, they make burgers and fries and milkshakes. But so do McDonald's, Burger King and Wendy's and all these other things. But what Shake Shack do really well is when you're in their facility, when you're in their restaurant, they make you feel like $1 million. You know, it's all about their customer service, and their culture is all about making the customer feel just, you know, so loved and respected and so happy when you're in those establishments. So people that go to Shake Shack, for me, they're not going to Shake Shack to buy burgers. Yeah, they're eating burgers, and it's, you know, whether it's nutritional or not is another question, but they're buying the feeling. They're going there because of how they feel. You know, Starbucks. I don't see Starbucks as a coffee company. You know, Starbucks is a meetup place. Starbucks is a place, it's the third office. It's the third place, the place to go and chill and relax and meet people. The fact it sells coffee is a complete aside to what I think Starbucks, you know, really stands for. You know, Apple.
That's a really interesting story, the Howard Schultz story. I didn't realize that Howard actually worked for Starbucks, and he brought them the idea of turning it into a hangout place.
Yeah.
And the original owner said, no, we don't like that. So Howard went and started his own coffee company doing it, and later came back, bought Starbucks from the original owners, and then grew it and scaled it massively. And I think I agree with you wholeheartedly. I would just argue that in a lot of what we teach is that, you know, Starbucks is a media company, and because they own media, they can do whatever it is that they want. Right. So you've got these companies that are doing it in a big scale, big way. They're media companies. They own attention, and then they own their thing, like, which was for Starbucks, is that they're the third place. Now having a Starbucks near your home increases your property value. right? And then they actually have their profiting thing, the profiting way that they do business, which Starbucks for them, it's coffee and other, you know, ancillary things. But if you look at a company like Apple, for example, Apple owns attention. And that's why they can manufacture cars. If you look at Amazon, Amazon has buyers, has just a database full of millions and millions and millions and millions of buyers. And because they own that attention, like you're talking about, they can buy a company like Whole Foods, boom,
right,
instantly increase the way that they're making money. And it goes, in my mind goes back to just one of my oldest and most favorite rules in business. And that's he or she who spends the most to acquire a customer wins. And if you look at a company like Apple is outspending their competition 3x monthly to acquire customers, it's no secret why they're growing at the scale that they're growing, which is just massive.
Absolutely. Because their back end, to coin a kind of marketing term, you know, maybe their front end is to sell an iPhone. You know, I've probably bought 17 iPhones, 5 iMacs, you know, 10 iPads, 4 watches, you know, practically everything we own is Apple. I've probably spent $100,000 with Apple, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years. So their cost of acquiring me on the front end, you know, they've got a phenomenal ROI, you know, on that. And Amazon's the same. You know, Amazon's one of my current favorite businesses. You know, for me, they're in the convenience business. You know, I buy things off Amazon using Amazon Prime, which for me is the greatest business invention ever created. I know I'm going to get the stuff the next day. They're reliable. They've never let me down. I will pay double on Amazon for the same product, knowing it's Amazon Prime and I'm going to get it the next day versus having to wait 3 or 4 days and paying an extra.
I love what Amazon has done to reprogram buyer psychology in such a way that for me, I live right in Rogers, Arkansas, store 1 Walmart Supercenter. The Walmart home office headquarters is just literally, I could throw a rock, you know, 10 miles that direction or 5 miles that direction. It's right there. I grew up going into a store, but Amazon retaught me how to buy products in a sense that I'm a busy person, right? I've got a business, got a lot of stuff going on. I'm traveling. I'm always doing stuff. So for me to think like, crap, I got to go to the store, it is now become one of the most inconvenient things that I have to do is go to the store when I know I can go to Amazon, purchase it, and in 2 days it'll be here for free. Yeah. Like, I don't even have to worry about it. I just know. And like you said, they've never let me down. And it's reprogrammed the way that I buy. Whereas I was immediate gratification, I need to go to the store and get it. Now it's like, I'm not, if I just think I'm going to go to the store, it's going to be 6 days before I go get, you know, the allergy medication I need. I'm just going to order from Amazon. It's going to be here and I don't even have to think about it anymore. That's been fascinating for me to sit back and study and see some of the ways that Amazon has just totally reshaped purchase behavior.
Absolutely. And do you know what totally blew me away? About 6-7 weeks ago, I was in Berkeley in California trying to buy a PR company. And I'm walking down the street in Berkeley and there's an Amazon store in Berkeley. And I'm like, what the hell? Amazon's an online business. Why they bought a store? So I had to go in and I went in and I found one of the guys in the store who worked there. And I said, just tell me, I'm a Brit. I'm curious. Call me ignorant. Why do you have stores? He said, everything in here is a best-selling item. So, and it's what they call the attach model. So when people are out there having breakfast or lunch, or they're, you know, going to another store that they have to go to because you can't buy it online, and people are coming in and literally this place was rammed. You couldn't move. It was insane. So it's great that they're covering all these different bases, but you know, they're definitely one of my favorite companies, Amazon. Insane. Have you read the Everything Store? The autobiography of Jeff Bezos.
No, I have to.
Phenomenal book. You got to read that book. It's just, you know, that guy's determination to succeed in that business. Back in the early days when he was really struggling, he had no cash flow, you know, tapped out with investors, you know, his purpose, his why, his juice, you know, to get the results that he wanted to do just kind of powered him through. So I have a lot of time and respect for him and for the business as well. It's great.
I think this is probably a great topic to kind of end on, but it's fascinating. If you take a look back at Bezos back in the 80s, when he started, right? He got started back in the 80s, right? It's like 85 or something like that.
Yeah.
I have to Google that to fact check it. But to think that what we as people kind of evolve into. And I think this is something that's applicable to agents, loan officers, investors. If you're trying to buy businesses, if you're a Joe Schmo listening to this, you have no clue what I'm talking about. If you're, you know, just somebody that's happened upon this podcast, that what you can evolve into as a person, because Bezos, I guarantee, did not have the idea that he was going to be selling the world in 2019 when he started his bookstore, his online bookstore, right? And so talk to me about where you've seen some people just make magic happen in business when they started thinking outside the box, like we're talking about acquiring or growing their company through acquisition, right? So if I'm a real estate agent, I'm going to go buy a credit repair business because that immediately enhances my value proposition, or I'm going to go buy a home staging business or so on and so forth. How can and how have you seen people just totally evolve into these, I don't know, call Bezos a monster, like into these entrepreneurial monsters that are taking over the world, whether their world is literally global or it's just a market inside of a small town?
Yeah, so I think there's two ways you can kind of answer that question. I think you can answer it at the kind of the small level. So take the Rialto, for example. It's going back to what I said before, that where I think you can dominate in any market is to kind of offer the customer a much more convenient, much more pleasurable experience. Again, people buy feelings. So having, you know, if you're a realtor and going and buying little kind of micro businesses that add to the kind of portfolio of what you can offer your customer, that's going to allow you to grow revenues, cash flow, take market share, and really kind of up level and set a new standard for the USP of your own business. And you can see that in all different markets. You know, that's what Cisco and IBM and HP and Microsoft and Amazon, you know, Amazon's not going out and creating a chain of food stores or developing its own app for, you know, reading books digitally or listening to books digitally. They're just going out and they're buying those businesses to, you know, to scale up in a much faster way. But what I also love about business is when you talk about kind of market disruption, and, you know, the absolute genius of this was the late Steve Jobs. You know, when he went back to Apple in the mid 1990s, when Apple was kind of on its backside, on its butt, you know, he really thought about, you know, kind of the future of Apple. So, you know, 25 years ago, they were a computer company. They were called Apple Computer. Now they're just called Apple, because Apple's all about connecting technology with the wants and desires and feelings of the consumer. So what he did was insane. You know, he completely transformed the music industry. You know, 20 years ago, you know, you'd go and buy a DVD, you know, you didn't have a kind of little device, 1,000 songs in your pocket, where you could buy songs online for a dollar or albums or all those different things. So he completely revolutionized that industry. And then he went on and completely revolutionized the mobile phone industry. You know, look at what's happened to Nokia. Look at what's happened to BlackBerry. They thought they were selling telephones. They weren't. You know, you're selling the experience. So launching the iPhone, which had, you know, an MP3 player, you know, a digital Palm Pilot and a phone in one device, just was a game changer. And, you know, I think they've fallen a little bit off the kind of beaten path a little bit with since he passed away and he left the business. But yeah, he's my ultimate hero in business. What that guy did was incredible. Unbelievable business and marketing brain.
Yeah, and to leave behind a legacy that goes on to earn $1 trillion in 2018, yeah, which is just, that's unheard of.
Unheard of, yeah.
That's awesome. All right, man. So let's say that I'm listening to this podcast and I'm like, man, this Carl guy knows his stuff. And I want to learn maybe how I can grow through acquisition, because maybe it's a business model that I've never thought of in the past. What is the best way for me to learn more about you and Ninja Acquisitions?
Great. So we've actually put together, my team and I, a free 90-minute training on how you can buy a small business using other people's money. So if you go to ninjaacquisitions.com/grantwise, so GRANTWISE, we've given you, we've put a special 90-minute training together just for your tribe if they want to come in and learn how this works. I'll take them through on that training my entire proprietary 10-step system of how to specify what deals, how to find them, all the different ways you can find hundreds of deals very, very quickly, how to have great seller meetings, what numbers you need, how to structure those deals, how to get them financed, and how to get them over the line so that you can own them. We even talk about, you know, what you do in the first 100 days, you know, as the owner of that business, whether you're integrating it to a business you already have, or if it's your first business, you know, what you need to do in that first 100 days to really get the business, you know, clicking.
That's awesome. All right, guys. So go to ninjaacquisitions.com/GrantWise, and we will make sure that we link that in the show notes, share it. You guys connect. Carl, this man is brilliant, has a ton of business experience, which is definitely something that we all need to learn, you know, more of for sure. Nobody knows too much when it comes to business because it's such a creative space. There's so many different ways that things can happen. I mean, if you look out at the world today, especially if you look at, you know, the entrepreneurial world, it's just evolved in just brilliant ways. And thanks to the internet, we now can do things in so many, many more ways that we definitely couldn't in the past. So Carl, man, thanks so much for jumping on. You've added so much value to our listeners. We appreciate you a ton.
Thank you, Grant. Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you on the next episode. Peace. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the Marketing Genius Podcast. We hope you got a ton of value from the show today. Make sure that you rate us on iTunes and Google Play, and we will look forward to seeing you on the next episode.